If they had gotten him there the day before, would it have been in time? What about if he'd had 1 week before an attempt at open heart surgery? Or perhaps if 1 year before that event, someone could have told the gentleman what was going to take place and he could have had a complete physical checkup. Perhaps the tragedy of one more victim of heart disease could have been averted. Well, what about when an entire nation becomes sick? Is there any way to get a checkup in time and to avert a terrible traumatic operation that might cause national death? Uncle Sam is sick. Those seeking political office usually like to point out some of the sicknesses of our present society, whether it's sociological ills, racism, crime, drugs, immorality, some of the problems of joblessness, unemployment, the imbalance of payments, the trade deficits, the inability of America to compete abroad, all of these many problems, whether pollution of the air, the water, and the land, whether the blighted big cities, the squalid poverty pockets of Appalachia or some of the cities of the East, or maybe even the clogged freeways of the West Coast. Whatever it is, whether it is a calamity brought about by weather, it seems to be the fault of the administration in power. Now, those seeking to retain political offices point out all the healthy signs. Why, America has never been in better shape, they say. And, of course, that is the direct responsibility of those who have been in office. And present political programs have been directly responsible for all these healthy signs. I couldn't help but notice at the conventions prior to the most recent elections in the United States that swept Richard Nixon into a landslide majority re-election, that some of the happy sounds issuing forth from the platform down in Miami Beach were a little hard for me to understand, because people always, you know, it's funny how politicians kind of begin to sound like theologians. They say, "I'm tired of all this bad-mouthing of our country. Let's talk about what's right about America. America needs good air, and she shall have it. America needs good water, and we will provide it." And about this time, somebody begins to cry. I remember Mr. Nixon visiting Dr. Billy Graham at the Knoxville campaign, and Mr. Nixon began to wax a little eloquent about these very things that I was suggesting. But during the political convention down there, Senator Barry Goldwater, who, you know, we did not elect during the days of, well, when Lyndon Baines Johnson became president, because we wanted to keep out of that war in Vietnam. I remember that. Anyhow, Senator Goldwater was on the platform, and he was talking about what was right about America. And he went on and on about our mountain majesty and our golden waving grain fields and our beautiful rivers and our valleys and our towns and our cities. I don't know why it is that every time somebody talks about what's right about America, they think of the Statue of Liberty and Mount Rushmore, and maybe of Niagara Falls or of Yosemite, but they don't get there during the summer when the tent pegs overlap and somebody crawls into your tent by mistake. But they never do get around to talking about the lovely brownstone apartments of Lower Manhattan and, oh, the skyline of Birmingham, or the freeways in Los Angeles, or the beauty of the waters in Puget Sound, a good name for the place. And they point out all these healthy signs. One of these days, I've been threatening in my own city of Pasadena, California, to go out there with a camera and to take pictures of Pasadena. And, you know, the proverbial ones of the beautiful art center, the fine old homes, the gorgeous grounds and the buildings. And certainly I wouldn't want to leave out Ambassador College, because we feel it's quite beautiful and a contribution. But if I were really going to be fair and honest, I'd also take a picture of some of the slums and some of the back alleys and some of the trash and some of the debris, some of the belching smokestacks and the clogged, jammed highways and byways and so on, and some of the depressed areas. And then you could say, this is also Pasadena, just as you could with the United States of America at large. You can say that the freeways of New Orleans with all the rubble and the trash, the Vaucouré, which is largely porno alley these days, instead of the beautiful French Quarter with its typical wrought iron balconies. We ought to take a look at it from an objective and a rational point of view instead of a super emotional patriotic point of view, which means we tend to sweep under the rug everything that is evil or that remotely suggests that maybe there is really something wrong in America after all. Now on this program, from time to time, I point out some of the ills, some of the problems, the faults, and get behind those faults by pointing out what the cause of those faults or those ills may be inside our country. I've said time and again that America has come to a new point in her history when we can get ourselves into an argument about what we are. When two Americans can begin to discuss America and get into a battle over what America is. We have lost our way. We don't know why we are. We don't know what we should be. We don't know what our intranational or supranational goal should be. What is our position in the community of nations? What is our responsibility toward the entirety of this world, toward all of humankind? Well, for the purposes of a short series of programs, I'm going to do just about what should have been done to that poor victim of yet another heart attack in the United States, and that is to take good old Uncle Sam down to the neighborhood physician, just like we would do if he were a friend of ours or a member of the family, and to have him completely diagnosed. Because today, the United States of America needs a complete physical, mental, psychological, emotional, and a spiritual checkup. And I don't believe for one instant that the super patriot who says America, love it or leave it, is right. As a matter of fact, whether you want to call it an ultra-liberal slogan or not, you know, the one that says America, change it or lose it, might be just a great deal closer to the truth. I firmly believe that there are many signs that we can point out in this series of programs I will now embark upon, which will prove to anyone who has a mind to see that America is in many very serious ways deeply ill. I don't believe it's too late to correct some of those illnesses, but I believe they should be correctly diagnosed. I believe they should be objectively and fairly faced, and I believe the causes should be discovered before we're ever going to find a cure.
The mighty Roman Empire had everything. Plenty of leisure time. Their own new morality. Enormous military might. The religion of their choice. Political freedom. What went wrong? Read The Modern Romans, a 93-page lesson of history ignored. For your free copy of The Modern Romans, write Ambassador College, Box 111, Pasadena, California. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, BC. The Modern Romans asks, can we afford the grandeur of Rome?
When enough people get sick, you can say a nation is sick because of the sickness of the majority of its people. And you know, more than one half of our people have a chronic disease. Now, this is only one portion of the analogy, but I'd like to refresh your memory by reminding you that according to estimates by the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, over 96 million Americans, or about half the population, has one or more chronic diseases or impairments. 7 out of 10 persons over 45 years of age suffer with at least one chronic disease or disability. Over 2 million Americans go to see a doctor every single day. And about 30 million Americans are spending at least part of the time in a hospital every single year. That's 1.5 million every day. Approximately 15 million surgical operations, as ghastly as they may appear to us, and what a horrible little bit of film footage. On the beginning of this program, I was about to get sick myself, but it happens every single day. About 15 million surgical operations are performed annually in the United States. Skyrocketing medical costs, now approximately $100 a day in a hospital, have given a rather grisly underlining to that old expression, I can't afford to get sick. 50% of all United States deaths are from cardiovascular diseases, that is, diseases of the heart and the circulatory system, and that's over 1 million deaths yearly. Now, I know the war in Vietnam was deeply divisive, that it caused horrible, traumatic, psychological, and spiritual, and moral problems inside the United States of America. And yet, for all of the agony of that over-sensationalized war which was fought in our living rooms over television, as it were, to where people were instant spectators to the most far-off places or nooks or crannies of the corners of the world where battles were being waged, yet in the United States, 1 million people die every single year in just such fashion as you saw in that grisly little bit of film for the openers of this program. 1 million times a year that is repeated. And yet that doesn't divide us emotionally or socially, but you would think that there would be such an all-out tremendous effort for people to find what is the cause of that, to get in better health, to stave off this cardiovascular disease, that it would be like a warfare within the country, that we would strike out at such a horrible enemy that is within us. But nothing too much happens. Oh, sure, there are fund drives, and there are various sponsorships for obtaining funds for research, and there are lots of signs around, and doctors and the AMA and other people urge you to go have a checkup. But still the deaths go on. It's still the number one killer in the country. Cancer is destined to strike 2 out of every 3 families in the United States, and 1 out of every 4 Americans is destined to be struck by some form of cancer if present trends continue. And cancer is now a leading cause of death among even children, believe it or not. The mental illnesses in the United States that afflict 1 in 10 of us, and 1 in 12 that actually need care, 1 in 10 who perhaps shouldn't be on the street, so much of that erupts in crime and in other areas, but that's 20 million Americans. That's 10% of the nation. Alcoholism, 9 million Americans afflicted by it. I'm not talking about social drinking. I'm talking about a disease. Arthritis, 17 million people. Cardiovascular diseases, heart and circulatory, 25 million, with 1 million dying every year. Emphysema and lung disease, 10 million plus, not really known. Because how do you know? Because people die of it a lot of times. Nobody diagnosed what they had prior to the time of the emergency operation. Cancer, several million. 900,000 now under treatment. 600,000 new cases diagnosed every year. 4 million Americans with diabetes. 5 million plus with ulcers, and that can never really be known. 2 million afflicted by epilepsy. Another 1 to 1.5 million, Parkinson's disease, a related type of disease. Multiple sclerosis afflicts about 500,000 Americans. Tuberculosis, 300 million under treatment, and many in a dormant stage, 40 to 50,000 become active every single year. Venereal disease, about 10 million, but that's an estimate only, not really known. It's called the Great Imitator, and of course a lot of people go with what they think might be a mild case of the flu, might be emphysema, some skin disease, it might be a kind of a runny nose, it might be a chest cough or something, and not know that they have, believe it or not, syphilis. It's called the Great Imitator. There are at least 10 million now afflicted with some form of venereal disease. It is the first communicable disease behind common colds and flu in America. It's epidemic among youth. 80% of men and women show no early signs of gonorrhea infection. It's a tremendous blight. Gonorrhea accounts for most new cases of venereal disease, and that's 2,500,000 cases that doctors know about annually. And they suspect that that's only maybe a quarter of what really is, of what does exist. When that many people get sick in a country, and some of these overlap. I mean, the one man that might have heart disease might also have cancer somewhere, or might also have several other related debilities or diseases. A person who may be terribly overweight, who has a high fat cholesterol content, who is about to have a heart attack, may also have venereal disease or something. So many of them overlap. It is very safe to say then, by way of analogy, that America, as a nation, is sick if you are looking only at the physical sickness statistics of our country. Now, people are divided in their opinions about the state of our country. Back in 1968, and I have 2 polls here, one from 1972 and one from 1968. Back in 1968, a Gallup poll found that nearly 60% of Americans, which were polled, rejected the label that America was a sick society. However, 48% of blacks felt it was sick, while 43% disagreed, 9% had no opinion. Among whites, 35% thought the United States was a sick society, while 60% rejected that label and 5% had no opinions. Those who thought America was not sick held one or more of the following opinions. 1, that only a small number are to blame. Now that to me is the height of naivete, but then that's for someone else to argue, I suppose. It is better reporting that there are just a few crooks and criminals lurking around the fringes of society. They cause all the sensationalism, but basically all us guys are the good guys and we're living just right and no problems. Or they felt that too much publicity was given to crime. Well, how many of you have heard recently that 1 million Americans die every year from heart disease? Is there too much publicity given to that? Or was there too much publicity given to the Vietnam War? Now, crime, because it is of a sensational nature, especially if it is very brutal, is naturally, by its very nature, sensationalized. It's what is newsy. While, of course, the common everyday occurrence of some person helping some other person or living quietly in a community is not news. You know, the old story that newspapers use, boy bites dog, makes a lot more news than dog bites boy. Well, society, they claim, is no worse than in its earlier years, and they cite the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, certainly the Civil War. They cite World War I. They cite the days of Prohibition, and so they say, we're no worse now than we've ever been. Or some say the United States is no worse in this respect than other nations. And that's a little naive, too, when you can name at least five cities immediately that have a higher murder rate, for example, than whole nations in Europe. And that includes Washington, D.C., about number 9 on the crime statistic list where murders per annum are counted in our nation, Los Angeles, Detroit, Chicago, Dallas, Houston, and especially Richmond, Virginia. And there are many other cities that are listed with more murders in their city environment alone than many nations inside Europe. And some of them put together, including all of Scandinavia and Great Britain. Some say that our society is not sick, it's just a little confused. I will take issue with those attitudes in this short series of programs and going through an analogy that I'll explain in just a few moments. Those who thought America was not sick, or I'm sorry, was sick, we already covered was not sick, summarized the symptoms as following. 1, the amount of rioting, killing, and crime. 2, lack of sufficient law enforcement. This is back in 1968, so we're going back 5 years. We were just about at the end of that sensational 60s decade, which saw monumental, horrible, riots on campuses, riots in the streets and the cities, 65 of America's cities in flames at one time or another, a time when there were more men in uniform confronting American cities in our own domestic riots than there were on the battlefields in Vietnam, believe it or not. And so it was no wonder that at that time, a lot of people did think that our society was sick. They cited laxity of the courts, that people are too selfish, that there isn't enough individual initiative, poor upbringing, a breakdown in morals, and a turning away from religion. I'm going to show you by way of analogy that we can subject dear old Uncle Sam to the very same kind of a checkup as you might a loved one in your own family. And you can have him checked from head to toe and find out just precisely what will be the diagnoses of his ills, if any, and what could be the suggested cures.
Think about the people. Think of revolution. Think about pollution. Think of a solution. Go the words of a current pop song. In these troubled times, is there a source you can turn to for understanding, for solutions to these problems? Yes, and in today's world, you can't afford to not know the answers to the many questions facing each of us. For articles on personal finances, family living, and marriage helps, the real meaning behind world news and advanced news of a better world tomorrow for you and your family, you need to read The Plain Truth, the world's unique human experience and family magazine. Your free subscription to The Plain Truth will begin immediately if you write Ambassador College, Box 111, Pasadena, California. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, BC.
By way of analogy, I would like us to approach the subject just exactly as we might if we had a loved one within our own family that we really earnestly wanted to go down to the doctor for a checkup. Now, is it bad-mouthing a loved one that is very close to you by saying, well, your color isn't too terribly good and you've been having all these aches and pains and there are outward symptoms, and maybe you're not a doctor, but you can notice. I mean, I can notice outward symptoms in America without being a specialist in the field of ecology. without being an agronomist or a horticulturalist or an agriculturalist or a physicist or a chemist or a scientist in some specialized field. I'm not an MD, so I can only read what the newspapers and the AMA journals and others tell me about medical problems in America. I'm not a specialist when it comes with regard to the content, let's say, of particulate matter or sulfur dioxides of various chemicals, nitrogens and the like, or of perhaps carbon monoxide in the air. But then I am somewhat of a specialist too, because I know when my lungs burn, when my eyes are smarting, when my vision is impaired, when I can't see the sunset because of the scud and the slurp and the slop out here that is in the sky. And I don't really think in my own mind that it's bad-mouthing America to point out what some of the problems are. After all, our free system is built upon the notion that a person ought to speak his mind, that when he sees problems in the country, he ought to talk about those problems openly and in lateral discussion with his fellow citizens. And I believe you can disagree on issues without being disagreeable. And I believe that just as a member of a family might be quite concerned about a loved one within the family and might really urge that person to go down to have a checkup, that he should no more be accused of bad-mouthing the patient than should the doctor, who at the other end of this act puts the stethoscope on the fellow's heart and begins to say he hears a murmur and decides he wants to go to a complete cardiovascular checkup and maybe get one of these electronic devices hooked up to him to find out about it. So someone who points out weaknesses in our system, breakdown in the flow of goods and services, unemployment, some of these horrible problems of crime and of divorce, of immorality, of pornography, of drug addiction, of venereal disease, of the debilitating, weakening symptoms of our own country that have weakened our national resolve, that have made us pull back from a status in the entire community of nations in the world, where we ought to be fulfilling a very large, transcendental, international goal that is set for us by some higher power, perhaps, of which we know very little. I think that drawing those analogies cannot possibly be called bad-mouthing America any more than a concerned member of a family could be accused of bad-mouthing old Uncle Sam, if Sam is his uncle that lives in the family there, by being concerned about his color. So in this short series of programs, we're going to analyze Uncle Sam by taking a look at the old boy from head to foot. We're going to look at his head. We're going to draw the analogy that perhaps the head would be the brains, the intelligentsia of the entire country, the government and its leadership, people who form and are directors of public opinion, the think tanks, our universities, our educational systems. Where are the brains of the country? Who makes the policies? Do you? Most people say that they know what some of the problems are, but they feel absolutely helpless to do anything about them because they don't know why Henry Kissinger ran off to do this or that or the other thing. They know that Mr. Nixon sent him. But who are all the White House aides? Who are the brains behind the president's cabinet? Where are the brains that feed into the White House and into various vast bureaus and agencies in Washington, D.C. that affect national policy? And can we say, as we look at the head of the nation, that it truly is healthful? That it's in good shape? We look at the heart, and we'll analogize, perhaps draw the analogy that the heart is the very core of the being of the country, the moral fiber, the stamina, the strength, and the spiritual character of its people. Maybe that's a fair analogy. You might think of any number of ways that you could draw these relationships to try to find out whether a whole country is sick. To me, the skeletal framework will be the very principles of the founding fathers, the documents upon which our free society is based. I'll be quoting from some of those and asking some very straightforward questions about those earliest documents that really portray to us right now today what America is all about. Have we achieved yet, in the modern 1970s, some of the dreams of the founding fathers of this country? The muscular system is the workforce to me. That 25 to 44-year-old age group of the viable, powerful wage earners of America, our industry, our assembly line production, our gross national product, our factories and businesses and our homes as we compete among nations. The bloodstream of our country, to me, would be the analogy of our freeways, our rails, and our airways, and in short, the flow of goods and services. And also, you can draw the analogy of the nervous system, of the communication centers of a body, They're communicating to the brain that the little finger is in trouble. And we've got a communications breakdown. We'll draw that analogy, and we'll get into that in some depth, too, in this short series. The digestive system, well, that's what expels or gets rid of the wastes. And what about the pollution aspect? We're not a consumer society. We're a kind of a user society. We use it. We take it out of the box, and then we wonder what to do with the box or the carton in which it came. Now, this is not really my analogy by itself. There was one who drew this analogy years and years before me. And that analogy is found back in the book of Isaiah, a prophet who talked about the people of God during that day. And I believe with all of my being that this prophecy relates to the modern day American and British people. That it means the people of Canada, of the United States of America, right now, today. It says in verse 3 of Isaiah, the first chapter, the ox knows his owner. An ox is pretty stupid, but he knows who his boss is. And the ass, his master's crib. Even a donkey knows which stall to go into. But Israel does not know, my people does not consider. Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors, they have forsaken the Eternal, they have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward. And then he draws this analogy. Why should you be stricken anymore? Why should God allow us to be punished anymore? You will revolt more and more. You can see the scripture right there in front of your eyes as we photographed it. You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick and the whole heart faint. From the sole of the foot, even unto the head, there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. And then it goes on to predict some rather dire consequences as a result of some of these deep sicknesses which have not been bound up, not been mollified. Why? Well, because they have not been diagnosed, because they have not been discovered, because people have not known what the problems really were, because someone has not been telling us what the problems were and what to do about them. Well, you need to write for this booklet, The Modern Romans, that shows the decline of our Western civilization. And also the Plain Truth magazine. It deals with these and other issues every single month. It's free of charge and no price if you write to Ambassador College, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Canadian viewers, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. Until next time in a short series, Garner Ted Armstrong. Goodbye, friends.
You have seen Garner Ted Armstrong. Send your letters to Ambassador College. Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Or Post Office Box 44, Vancouver, BC.